Are you ready?
Let's make some noise, come on!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest edition of the Broad Street Line. I'm Roy Burton. Alongside me, as always, my tag team partner and a man who is fresh off the plane. Yes, fresh off the plane from Double or Nothing. Excited to give his Double or Nothing recap. The mayhem in the arena or whatever the heck they call it. One, Chris Domingo. Mr. Domingo, how are you doing as always? This fine, as we always say during the pandemic, this fine Saturday morning, sir.
Oh, man, I can't wait to have that appointment viewing every Saturday with Collision.
Yes. Chris Domingo on a Collision course with AEW Collision starting June 17th. But we will not talk about AEW today. No, not much anyway. We have plenty of other stuff to get to on this edition of the Broad Street Line. Of course, we need to talk about the local sports team, specifically our deep dive today on the 2001 Philadelphia 76ers. There was a documentary on NBA TV earlier this week about that 2001 finals run. Had a chance to watch a good portion of that and live through all of it. Both of us lived through all of it. So we have plenty of stuff to talk about on this special edition of the Broad Street Line. We also have some other NBA stuff to talk about as well, because the finals began this week. Heat and Nuggets underway in the NBA finals. Who will take home the Larry O'Brien trophy? We will find out soon enough. Also, the Eagles began began OTAs this week, so we have to talk about that. And, of course, because we are a partial wrestling podcast, we will give our thoughts on Night of Champions and the Super Kicks, plural, heard round the world this past week from Saudi Arabia. So we have a lot to get to on this edition of the Broad Street Line. As we always say, sit back, relax, take a ride on the Broad Street Line. The future Sports Talk Radio has finally arrived. Any shout-outs, sir?
No, because I know we have a lot of really important shout outs to give.
Yes. Thank you guys as always for listening to us and supporting us here on 106.5 FM WPPM LP Philadelphia. And however you get this show, whether it's through podcast or through a streaming on the Philly Cam website. But if you are a podcaster, please, or a podcast listener, please do us a solid. Continue to follow us and like us and share the tweets on YouTube, StreamYard, Spreaker, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify. Just do a search for the Broad Street Line. Download us to your phone, your iPad, your MP3-enabled device, your computer. Listen to us at home. Take us with you on the go 24/7, 365. We are a very, very accessible show. And speaking of supporting us, please do us a solid. We are in the midst of our fundraiser here at WPPM. For the spring fundraising drive here at WPPM 106.5 FM in Philadelphia. And between now and June 7th, we are looking to raise $5,000 to continue bringing you the best in community-focused radio here in Philadelphia. Now, WPPM, the PPM in our name stands for People-Powered Media. And here we are non-commercial, participatory, rehumanizing radio that is in your own backyard in Philadelphia, speaking to Philadelphia issues, talking about Philadelphia issues and Philadelphia topics. And without this fine radio station and the people who run it, we wouldn't have been able to bring you many of the guests that we've hosted over the years, whether it's been virtually during the pandemic or whether it's in the studio. We've had a chance to talk to award-winning writers, Emmy-winning TV hosts, and some of the best and brightest names in the world of sports and sports media. And we're glad you guys have been along on this ride with us, and we hope you can continue to enjoy it. And if you want to ensure that you can enjoy it, please take a minute to make a gift to WPPM today. You can donate and acknowledge your support of the Broad Street Line, our show, at wppm.phillycam.org/donate. Again, that's wppm.phillycam.org/donate. And when you donate, please do us a solid and note that you are donating in the name of the BS line, or the Broad Street Line, I should say, and we will love you forever. And when you donate, again, any donation amount that you donate is worth it. $1, $5, $10, doesn't matter. And anything you donate, again, we'll get you a gift from the station. I know $1 gets you a sticker. I think $10 will get you a shout out. If you are the advocate level where I donate it to, you can get your choice of a t-shirt or a tote bag. So I am the Paul E. Dangerously Advocate of the WPPM fund drive here in spring 2023. And again, we're raising $5,000 again to continue bringing you the best in programming here, local programming here at WPPM. We are recording this a day and a half into the fund drive, and we are already close to $1,000. So again, we are getting very close to our goal. But again, Anything you can donate helps, whether it's a dollar, $3, not a recurring donation. It's just a one-time donation to WPPM as we are looking to raise money for the station. $75 gets you shout outs and tote bags and t-shirts and all sorts of cool stuff. So again, you get some good stuff and it's a tax deductible donation as well. So please do us a solid. Check out WPPM.com, phillycam.org/donate and donate today. You can also go to phillycam.org and click the donate button there as well. Please do us a solid again, because it's very important. Notate that you are a fan of the Broad Street Line on your donation, and we will love you forever and give you a super, super special shout out on the show. So thank you guys as always for listening. And again, please do us a solid and continue to share the word between now and June 7th for our spring fundraiser. It's time now to talk a little bit of basketball. Before we get into the NBA finals, we do need to mention that the Sixers have made it official. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Philadelphia. Nick Nurse, the new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, had his introductory press conference on Thursday. I don't know if you had a chance to look at any clips, Chris, but he came off as a pretty solid dude. I'm pretty excited about the hire.
It really, like, I don't know. Like, it still is, like, I don't know. Like, what is he coaching? Like, I don't know. Like, is he going to coach any more less age out of James Harden? Like, I don't know. Like, is he going to – I really have doubts on, like, I don't know what – how much more, like, motivated a Joel Embiid can get. Because really, like, I don't know. Like, if we're relying on a coach to get an MVP candidate motivated, I'm like, that's like, I don't know. That's just an hour long discussion there. And like, I don't know. For me, it's all about the players. And now it comes on the GM. What can you do to like give Nick Nurse a non, I don't know, like, because really for me, it really starts with July 1st. What do you do? Does Harden come back? And if he doesn't come back, hopefully he doesn't come back, what do you do then? And what do you do with Tobias Harris? Because I feel like that really, I don't know which one needs to fall first. I feel like Harden is the first domino, but the 1D domino after that is Tobias Harris, because you can't have him on the team again. You can't.
Yeah, they specifically asked about James Harden at the introductory press conference. And Nick Nurse was quick to say, when asked, do you want James Harden back? He said, James Harden's a great player. And then they kind of pressed him on him a little bit. And he said, basically, James Harden has an option and it's up to him, but we would love to have a player the caliber of James Harden come back and things like that.
It was a non-answer. It was a tepid endorsement, yes. I guess. Yes. Like, it was a non-committal endorsement. And I like reading the tea leaves, it feels like the Sixers, and I mean, I've been critical of Daryl Morey, but really, like, I mean, he's done some things to, like, because really, like, not many GMs could have gotten out of the Al Horford extension and the Tobias Harris extension. He got out of one of them. Now it's time to get out of the other one. And, like, I don't know. And I feel that, like, I don't know, they have contingency plans. I mean, like, I've been told that, like, this guy's a role player. And, like, I don't know. Unfortunately, he might be. But, I mean, a Fred VanVleet, who – is a big Nick Nurse fan. He played for him, won a championship with him. I mean, that's not the worst fallback plan. I think it's a very good fallback plan.
No, he's a really good fallback plan in the hopes that James Harden's not here anymore. We'll talk about VanVleet in a second. I do want to mention that you said, you know, Nick Nurse and motivation. Yeah, like Nick Nurse should not, like, it's not on Nick Nurse to motivate a 29-year-old Joel Embiid who just won the MVP. It shouldn't be. I mean, Joel Embiid is a grown man, just won the MVP, who just got bounced out of the second round yet again. I mean, that should be enough motivation for him. But I will say that Nick Nurse will hold Joel Embiid and whoever else is on this roster accountable, like he did in Toronto. Like, he held all the stars on that team accountable, whether it was Kawhi or Kyle Lowry or, you know, Pascal Siakam, whoever. Like, he has a reputation of holding his guys accountable. And he also has a reputation of being a really good player in terms of player development. Like, you saw, like, the young guys on that Raptors roster over the years that Nick Nurse had been there. Like, a lot of those guys are, you know, young players. Like, they've gotten markedly better, you know, under the tutelage of Nick Nurse. So that bodes well for a guy.
And more importantly, Roy, I think you never see like the coaches behind the scene, the player develop, like the literal player development guys that were under Nick Nurse. Because before Nick Nurse was a coach, before head coach, he was the guy behind the scenes, behind Dwayne Casey. And he was the one developing the Van Fleets, the Ananobis, the Siakams. So like, and right. like, and like, I didn't like, I mean, those guys weren't touted, like, I don't know, high picks, and they, and he maximizes them. So I mean, like, he's not going to turn like, I don't know, average players into superstars, but he'll turn average players into all-stars or borderline all-stars. And that's really what I think that's what you're trying to do. Like, I'm just trying to figure out what is the immediate, like, I don't know, deliverable for a head coach of a Philadelphia 7? Because really, you can't have a deliverable until the roster is kind of stabilized, can you?
Well, I think you can know, if nothing else, I think you can expect Nick Nurse to make Tyrese Maxey a better player, and I think you can expect him to make Paul Reed a better player. Like, I think that, like, we know that, like, if he does nothing else, like, you know, we'll figure out what happens with Harden and Tobias Harris and things like that. But you have two young guys who are, you know, probably fairly important pieces, two really important pieces of this team's future. You know, can you help Paul Reed make that leap where he's a, you know,
but
regular?
In these meetings, Roy, mm-hmm. are like, I don't know, like, when they're shooting straight from the hip, are you giving him this kind of directive, we're still in it to win a championship?
Well, he said at the press conference, like, he's only here to win. Like, the thing, the name of the game is to win. You know, like, that's what he said he would sell James Harden on when in terms of coming back to Philadelphia. It's like, if you want to win, this is the place to win. Because, again, I'm paraphrasing Nick Nurse, because I believe in the vision of Josh Harris and Daryl Morey. Like, winning is always a thing. You coach guys to play better on offense, to play better on defense, to do the right things. But more importantly, like, your goal is to go out there and win every basketball game you possibly can. So I without knowing who's going to be on this roster, like, it's hard to say, you know, how much winning you're going to do. So that's why I'm saying, like, as of right now, what do I expect Nick Nurse to do year one, knowing exactly what I know about the roster as it is right now? I just expect the Sixers fundamental to do the fundamental things better, like, across the board.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
no, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe you set a blueprint for 2024. And right. For me, like, knowing what the roster looks like and likely will look like, I'm not, and like, I feel like I don't, like I'm just trying to figure out how much of a future do you plan with Joel Embiid? Because I feel like that is the, like, I don't know, is this a wait and see? Because I feel that, like, I don't know, like, is he going to be okay with this transitional year, or do you have the opinion like me, I don't care?
Yeah.
Like, no, I feel like, I don't know, like, you have to do some level of planning. Like, if you think that Nick Nurse is this very good developmental coach that can coach that's frankly won a championship, like, right, with a good player, are you doubling down on Nick Nurse and the development more than you are with Joel Embiid at this point?
Do the two things have to be diametrically opposed? Can you not do both at the same? Like, if you make Tyrese Maxey, if you work on developing Tyrese Maxey, and you work on developing Paul Reed, I'm just pulling those two names out because they're the two, I guess, more important young guys. If you make those guys fundamentally better players, doesn't that lessen the burden on Joel Embiid? You know, in you know, situations where Joel Embiid clearly struggles, you know, in second rounds.
No, but does that lead to wins? Does that lead to, like, I don't know, because, like, I don't, like, I feel mm-hmm. that it is not, like, I don't know, is that going to be, like, does that make it towards the Eastern Conference Finals this year?
That's a fair question. Yeah, and again, it's hard. You're asking me, you know, first week of June. I don't know. Probably not. But again,
we're gonna know a lot by July 15th. I think we need to, like, I don't know, like, I don't know, see what happens with Harden, because I feel like that really is the domino. Like, I don't know, and frankly, that's gonna be the domino that makes me interested in this team for the next 2 years. Like, I feel that would be, like, and if you asked me what I think is gonna happen, I think he walks directly to the Rockets, probably. Like, I don't know. I don't, like, maybe you get a massive trade exception, but I mean, like, I feel that, like, I don't know, after Harden walks, you just clear, like, I don't know, like, and but then that's when the Tobias Harris move would need to happen. Like, I mean, like, you need to have July 2nd when you hear that he's going back to the Lemon Pepper Wings in Houston. You need to say, okay, we've engaged X team. Call them now.
No, because that's, yeah, That's the move.
No, because then, like, because then you need the – then, like, I don't know. Then I think the domino, then this contingency domino would – that Flea has to happen. Like, these, like, I feel it has to happen in sequence because you can't sign because you can't sign Fred VanVleet for, like, out of cap room because you don't have any. Like, I don't know. You would need to just basically relate – you would need to trade Tobias Harris for, not for like, an ex – like, I don't – like, I like, that's – like, I feel like that's the kicker where, like, I don't know. If – what does Toronto look for if you were to do a sign and trade? Are they going to just take nothing, or no, do I they mean, take like, Tobias Harris?
I would say like I think that the if I think the most logical thing would just be a Tobias Harris for Fred VanVleet plus whatever filler you need to do to make the salaries work, because VanVleet has a $22.8 million option for next season. Again, he's probably going to pick it up, man. He should pick it up. So again, like, so you can't obviously like you have to trade for him at that point. So Tobias Harris makes 37 ish next year. So figure out whatever filler on the Toronto side that you need to make it work and make that work. I think, because again, both those contracts are up next year. So Toronto gets a $38 million off their books next year. So I mean, like, it's a good number.
But what if Van Fleet opts out and says, you know what?
Why would he opt? I don't think, like, you think he would opt out of that 23 million? Like, I would not.
Oh, absolutely. No, he's like, I would bet $500 that he's going to look for a max, like, not a max deal. He'll look for 30. Say the deal is, okay, he opts out, but you're going to need to give him 4 and 120. I mean, and then that really is it. Like, I mean, they're not going to give him 4 and 120.
Like a sign and trade, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I mean, that's fine. Like, if it means getting, because again, you need that playmaker like back on. Yeah. Like, you don't have James Harden. You need a playmaker. And you can say what you want about VanVleet, and we will if that ever happens. But again, he had a 3.6-1 assist to turnover ratio last year. Had his best season in terms of assists last year, 7.2 per game. He's a really good defender. He was borderline second team all defense year before last, 19-4-7. Not a very efficient score, but he can get you a basket, you know, when you need.
But he's been in tough clutch situations and made shots. Like, I mean, you could argue he was the second best player on that Raptors title team. I mean, like, third or second or third. I mean, but he was one of the critical guys on that team next to Lowry. Like, I mean, like, that's why, like, I mean, and you need dudes like this. Like, I don't know how many times you need to, like, watch the Miami Heat. Like, they are getting to a finals with just vets that are washed, but can guide the team, like the Loves and the Lowrys. Like, I don't know, like, I mean, it helps to have Jimmy Butler just basically, like, putting the will of, like, the fear of God in every one of these guys. But, like, I mean, that's where, like, I, as much as I want the coach to hold these guys accountable, these guys need to hold each other accountable. Like, it starts in that locker room, and they don't have enough Tuckers and Meltons. They have too many Harrises and Hardens. You need more of the dudes that will – I mean, and it's, like, frankly, like, I don't know, like – I'm going to be honest with you. I'm planning on a life without Embiid. Like, I really am. Like, I don't know. Like, this is like, I mean, I just think, like, I don't know. What are we going to get? Like, this trio of, like, psychotherapists trying to get Joel Embiid. No, like, I don't, like, that's where, like, I don't know. If people are expecting this switch to turn with him, you're sorely mistaken.
Yeah, I can't, like we said, you know, before, after they got bounced out of the playoffs. Like, at this point, you cannot expect Joel Embiid just to come back like man on fire, hair on fire, and just dominate the league and be like uber motivated to destroy everything in his path, you know, for 82 games plus the playoffs and get to a conference finals, NBA finals. Like, he has to prove it to all of us before we should believe that he's going to, you know, be that. But that being said, I mean, again, like, you can say that, you know, say all that. He's still a fantastic player. He's still going to be a player at MVP caliber level. And again, if you can get the right ancillary pieces around them and get a coach who's gonna hold these guys accountable, this is a good thing. However, I will say this about Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse does have a tendency to play his starters into the ground, not Thibodeau level, but I mean, like, those guys log like 36, 37, 38 minutes, like a lot. So
but
obviously, like, you have to temper that with
a beat. Isn't that what you need these dudes to feel pressed. Like, I don't know. Like, I know he has a lot of injury problems, but you don't hear this stuff with Spoelstra. Like, I mean, that's where I think I know he has a litany of injuries, and maybe that's just it. He's just got too many injuries in his rearview mirror to, like, bear down. Like, I don't know. But I just see, and this is where this, like, Heat culture comes in, where they are telling you, you have to be at this. And it's almost like the Army, where, like, they're saying, yo, you got to be at this body fat. Or you're just like, or you're going to just run sprints until you get there. And, like, it's not for everyone, but the people that are there want to do it because they want to, like, and maybe Embiid is just not the perfect example of this, because maybe he wants to do it, but his body just won't cooperate. And, like, I don't know. And then it comes to a point where if you're saying this, then, like, I don't know. So you're just going to live with the, like, I don't know, eventual breakdown of the body. And then coinciding with the apathy, because then he gets, like, bent out of shape or just defeated, where he just mentally is out of it.
Well, hopefully Nick Nurse is the guy who can combat that. Again, hope, like, you mentioned, I think it was last week or week before, it's like, you know, you mentioned that Doc Rivers, you know, does have the championship, but again, like, that championship is a long time ago. And, like, that you know, the 10-plus years of not making it past the second round probably weighs more than that title that he won with the Celtics. Again, you got a fresh guy, a fresher championship in Nick Nurse. Maybe if Nick Nurse comes in and it's like, look, man, like, that apathy don't work no more. Like, again, I coached a Hall of Famer in Kawhi Leonard who won a title. You know, like, I've coached teams who, again, surrounded, you know, who had really just one superstar and a really good support.
Which is funny, like, Kawhi and Joel are kind of similar in terms of
They're very similar.
Yeah, like, no, and, like, I don't know, like, and that's where I feel like Nick Nurse, I don't think sells, because Nick Nurse shouldn't have to sell anything to Joel Embiid anymore. Right, yeah. No, like, he should just say it in matter-of-fact tone. I coach Kawhi Leonard. He's as brittle as hell as you. I want a championship with him. Yeah. So if you don't follow me, then, like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, dude. Like, yeah. No, I feel like that needs to be the pitch to Joel Embiid to be like, okay, you need to do – And you know what? Like, I don't know. I watched that 0-1 documentary. I got all teary-eyed. No, I feel like there needs to be, like, this level of dedication that Joel Embiid, like, I don't know, like, sorry. He needs to, like, channel that inner Jimmy Butler to say, you know what? This is really, I need to do this, like, over my dead body situation. And, like, I don't know. Maybe he has it, maybe he doesn't. But I feel after this season, you will know, period.
There's a certain very tall basketball player who has taken Instagram over the past couple of weeks and posted tons of workout videos, just working out at the basketball court, lifting weights, former Sixer, by the way. I want to see those kind of pictures on Joel Embiid's Instagram. I want to see those pictures of him in Miami lifting weights, playing basketball, doing those things, running up those hills. Like, again, a certain guy who we will not mention by name. But I want to. This is what I want to see, man. This is what I need to see. If you want Philadelphia to buy back in, this is what I need to see out of you, my guy.
Yeah, no, because right now he doesn't have that. He doesn't have the majority support anymore, period. No. I mean, like, he'll have the stands and they're deranged. But, like, the majority of people I don't think they're me because I'm done with him forever. Yeah, you're like, I don't know. Yeah. But, like, there are people that are leaning off of the Embiid fence. A lot of people. And you need to win them over. And like, I don't know, he's gotten a lot of apologies for a long time because he was the only hope. And I felt like people just overbet on that chip where they're just like, you know, because frankly, it was the only chip. It was the only chip you played for years because the Simmons chip failed. The Fultz chip in that revisionist history ass. No, like, I don't know. Like, no, like, every chip you played was a dud. This was the only chip everyone had signs that this chip might not pan out. And you really got the sense that it's not going to pan out last month.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, again, we got the cold dose of reality last month, and it kind of stinks. Cause again, like, this guy, you know, has his MVP award, is seventh all time in points per game in NBA history. Like, he's just like, you're a fantastic player. But just can't get over that one hump in the playoffs. Speaking of the playoffs, you have the NBA finals going on right now. As of this recording, they're getting ready to play game 2 on Sunday, but We were recording this. As you hear this, they're playing game two. But we were recording this prior to game one, Heat versus the Nuggets, before the series goes off. Nuggets minus 425, which is a heavy number in an NBA Finals matchup. The Heat are plus 320 for those of you who bet. Again, like you look at the Nuggets, a fantastic team, very deep. You know, obviously Nikola Jokic, two-time MVP. Jamal Murray was just a man on fire in the playoffs, has been a man on fire in the playoffs. Michael Porter Jr. been a fantastic shooter. And you look at the Heat and you're like, you know what? It's Jimmy. Like, Jimmy's been the guy. Jimmy's been the engine carrying this team through. However, Caleb Martin came really close to winning the MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals this past week over the Boston Celtics. That Boston Celtics team tried to come back from a 3-0 deficit, tied the series up 3-3, but only first play of game seven, Jason Tatum rolls his ankle, and the Celtics were just not the same after that. Just couldn't get things done. So Heat Nuggets in the NBA Finals. Again, we're doing this before game one, so we have no idea what happened in game one. I imagine that you will side with the Nuggets in this series, right? Like, the Jimmy magic has to run out at some point, correct?
Yeah, no, I feel like, I don't know, like, and I think someone said it, like, that series should have been over in six. It only took, like, I don't know, like, another, like, Fisk waving a ball, like, fair. Right? No, that really what it was. I mean, like, and, like, I don't know, like, I think, like, I don't know, like, I think Boston, consistently showed its mettle. That they didn't have any, like, I don't know, like, they were the most talented team. And I think Charles Barkley said it. It's like, and I mean, it's pretty apparent once you watch them for a while, a couple series, they get by on talent. There's no cohesion. They basically run the same play every time. It's like a pick and roll or a pick and pop. Like, there's nothing, like, I don't know. And that's what I think is great about this season. I think the what you could say about the season is finally the most talented teams aren't winning championships. And that's good. Like, I don't know. Because for the longest time, man, you just have these teams, these most talented teams with probably no chemistry at all. They just have, like, they have the best collection of players by, like, tenfold. And it doesn't matter if the chemistry goes. You think the Warriors' chemistry mattered when they had Kevin Durant? It didn't matter.
Right.
Like, yeah. I feel that, like, I don't know. Because I feel this is what the NBA needs to kind of, and the new CBA is going to lean towards that, where, like, you can't keep all your players or you can't build super teams. Like, distribute the talent so eight teams don't care about the entire NBA season. That's because really, like, by the first month, how many franchises just say, let's go on the tankathon and see, like, who we're tanking for? Like, no, I think this is, like, whoever wins this, and, like, I don't know, I think Denver will win, and I think, I mean, like, Jokic will, I mean, like, for me, I think, like, just as a Hoop fan, like, I feel like you finally have, like, I don't know, someone for a while, I feel it's been Giannis, I think, been, like, that's had laid claim to the best, to the double XL or the Source magazine best player in the game at the end of the season. I think Giannis has had it for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I think you got a new guy this year, and that's awesome.
Yeah, no, yeah. If Jokic wins the title this year, if they beat the Heat in the finals this year, you know, the man who already has two MVPs to his claim, who had a fantastic playoff run.
Probably should have won again.
probably should have won again. That's the thing. Probably should have won. Had better stats this year than he had last year, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, no, he just has, like, control. Like, I never really saw it, but he looks like a chubbier Larry Bird. Like, I don't know, like, the ball hand. Like, he's like a mix, and, I mean, I'd find a black guy to compare, but what black guys have looked like Nikola Jokic? None. Like, I know he feels like a mix of Bird that just controls, like, not the most athletic, but just knows how to pass or shoot. And, like, I don't know, he's like got some Sabonis in him too. Like, I feel that, like, I don't know. And that shows you, like, not the most athletic dudes, because we've been living in this LeBron era where, like, the most athletic guys just run the table. And, right. Like, I don't know, that's cool. But, like, it's cool to see a dude that, frankly, isn't in the greatest shape just dominating.
Yeah, well, like you mentioned, Bird, Sabonis. I might throw a little bit of Kevin Love in there, like prime Kevin Love.
Yeah.
Kevin Love now. Yeah, but he's got, like, not the super athletic guy, but does, like, all the right things fundamentally, is in the right spot fundamentally, knows where to find his teammates.
And that's not a stacked Denver team by any means. Like, that is right. a I think that's a decently talented team. I mean, they hit on Murray. They hit on Porter Jr. They traded, they got rid of Gary Harris at the right time because then he just broke down. And got what a Tobias Harris should be, an athletic kind of, dude who kind of, covers the best dude. He's the energy dude. And I don't even know how much he makes. He sure as hell don't make 38. But he probably earns his salary. Especially on a good team. When Aaron Gordon's making 30 on the Magic, it looks bad. But if Aaron Gordon's making 28, 30 on the Nuggets where he's, doing impactful stuff, you're like, thank you, man.
Yeah, we always talk about before, talk about on this show. It's if you guys, in the NBA especially, you got to have a couple guys who are outplaying their salary. Guys who are giving you something good, but it's got to be, not quite, not better than what you're giving salary-wise. Aaron Gordon's making $21 million this year. Aaron Gordon, what, for $21 million, giving you
Aaron, what he's getting? $21 million. That's it.
Like, Aaron Gordon at $21 million is a fantastic. It sounds weird to say, but that's a fantastic bargain. Air quotes bargain for what you're getting for.
You know what? That's what Tobias Harris should make, basically. So what we're saying is Tobias Harris is getting overpaid by $17 million a year.
My apology. I'm sorry. 19.7. 21. That's 21 next year. 19.7. 19.7 for
Aaron Gordon.
Jr. is making too much, but
no, that's how you get a championship. I would have thought just in this market with the Collinses and the Bams and the Aitons, those dudes are making 30 and they have no business making 30. But once again, you gotta hit those dudes that are, like you said, overproducing against their salary, period. And obviously, whatever the hell you're paying Jokic just don't matter because he's worth whatever. And I guarantee Jamal Murray's probably equal that. He's a 28-ish million dude. I think he's that dude that if Jokic is struggling, he can carry the weight sometimes. You're not asking to carry it all the time. And that's where I feel like a dude like Jaylen Brown failed, where you have a dude like Tatum, who's obviously hurt. You couldn't just carry the load for a game. And when he tried, he just failed. He looked bad.
Yeah, you're 1A or you're 2 or your next man up, should be able to step up for a game. Again, this is the 2-1-1 theory. If you need your second best player to step up for a game and be that guy, he's that's a real 2. That's a true mark of a 2. A 2 is a guy who can be the one in spot situations. We did not see that with Jaylen Brown. Just to circle back on the Jokic thing. Jokic this year, 33.6. Jamal Murray, 31.6. Both making less.
That's stealing. What you're saying is the MVP of the league makes almost $5 million less than Tobias Harris. I'm sorry. That will never make any sense as long as I'm alive. I'm telling you, I have no idea how Elton Brand still has a job. I don't know. You should have, I don't care if it's an honorarium job or in memoriam. Memoriam for dead people. Is he picking up all the checks?
If you said to yourself now, then, whenever, but even then, it's I'm going to sign Tobias Harris to a contract that will make him one of the top 20 paid guys in the NBA. If you just said that to yourself, right? That doesn't even make sense. It didn't make sense then. Really doesn't make sense now. So at the time when he said it, shouldn't something in his mind, the thing in your mind that stops you from doing the bad things, shouldn't that say, you know what? Let's kind of rethink this. I know we feel we're kind of stuck in this spot, but we're not really stuck because we don't have to give this man $37 million.
No, but I feel like this is where the organizational infrastructure, which is very shaky. And it's always been shaky. And you notice in times of adversity, the whole infrastructure just shakes because it's not strong. If you had a strong organization, someone would have called bull on that. Even if Brett Brown has to snitch to Josh Harris and be like, no, I'm going to quit if you make this deal. There was no one. Adam Aaron could have called from his movie theaters to say, no, you can't. No, Adam Aaron wouldn't have not made this deal. I feel that when we dwell upon this, I feel because we could, Because then I feel a lot of litigating with the Jimmy thing, and like, I don't know, like, because like, I'll frankly, like, I don't know, like, when it happened, even though I wasn't the biggest Simmons fan, he would have burned this organization down like he did Minnesota, like he did Chicago, because they did not have the strong enough pieces to basically fight Jimmy when he wants to be fighting. Like, I don't know, you've seen multiple times where this little Filipino dude is saying, Jimmy, fight me, like, I don't know, and like, and he doesn't back down. But that's what happens when you have the head, the godfather, literally has a bag of rings that he just drops on a desk when he's trying to recruit dudes. What bag of anything does the Sixers bring?
I mean, well, again, now you have the man who can bring a ring.
Does he carry it in that, like, does he carry it in like that jostle, like, I don't know, like pouch, like, I don't know, like you used to do with your class?
They get those little boxes now.
But I feel that's where, like when everyone does it, a realistic postmortem of this entire, it's just gonna just point to, like, I don't know, just like, I don't even blame the owner, like, I don't know, but the guys he's hired have it. And it starts with, like, I don't know, it's always been about the talent. And, like, maybe in that era where you saw the super teams and you're just like, yo, we just have to get the best. But when you suck at drafting, when you suck at finding the best players, then maybe you should have built a culture.
Yeah, and yeah, like, the Sixers, you know, are trying to build that now. We'll talk about the old Sixers in a second as a result of, you know, what we saw from the documentary. But before we get to that, I do want to mention again that we are in the midst of our spring fundraising drive here at WPPM 106.5 FM in Philadelphia. And again, between now and June 7th, we are raising $5,000 to continue bringing community-focused radio here in Philadelphia. And between studio maintenance and licensing fees and all sorts of stuff that we have to pay to stay on the air, it takes a lot of money to keep WPPM rolling each and every day. But without this radio station, again, we wouldn't have been able to be on these airwaves for several years now, again, bringing you some great guests and some great content and some cool stuff that we hope you guys have enjoyed and will continue to enjoy, you know, over the years to come. So please do us a favor. Donate if you can. If you can't, please share the word, spread the word. Acknowledge your support of the Broad Street Line at wppm.phillycam.org/donate. Again, you can donate at wppm.phillycam.org/donate. Please do us a favor and notate on the form who you're supporting, and it says, you know, what show are you supporting. Please notate the Broad Street Line, and again, we will get information from that. We will be told directly. We will love you forever. We will shout you out on the show. And again, any amount, you know, is good. $1, $5, doesn't matter. Every amount is important to the show. Like, they're looking for, you know, just people to kind of show their love for the station in general. So again, any amount that you could donate to the cause and donate on behalf of the Broad Street Line to keep WPPM on the air, we would truly, truly appreciate it. Let's circle back to 2001. Everything But the Chip, the documentary that premiered earlier this week on NBA TV about the 2001 finals run. You and I were talking about this before the show aired, and we were like, look, we love, like, you guys are listening to two of the most diehard Sixers fans, supporters of that. Like, we love that team more than we love 99% of the people we know in real life, right? Like, that 2001 run was special to both of us, but we didn't understand, or we weren't sure why that particular team was loved, like, gets the documentary treatment, let me say, as opposed to other teams that didn't win that much in the NBA and all sports. Like, I don't know, maybe this is across the sport thing. I'm not even sure. So I went back, Chris. I went back to see, all right, well, let me just see some other teams who didn't win, you know, in recent-ish memory. So I went back to the 20 years pre-bubble, pre the COVID bubble, all the other teams that got to a finals who didn't win, right? We got that Pacers team in 2000, which was just a random bunch of dudes. The Reggie Miller, Jalen Rose, Rick Smits, Austin Crozier Pacers, who lost. That was the first of the Lakers.
Who owned teams. The Sixers? Who owned the – no, like, that's what I feel like. I don't know. Man, it really – like, I don't know. Like, it's funny how, like, they really covered every series except for, like, the Eastern Conference title, which I frankly don't really have much recollection of. Like, I don't know why. Like, it was a very good series. Obviously, it went 7 games, but – You had that kind of, like, I don't know, like, after this, I'll let you go down the list, but I feel like, I don't know, like, I'll say the reason why, and it really took 10 minutes, the dynamic between the coach and the player. Like, I don't know, like, that really is. And like, I don't know, like, and you know what, man, you know, I love giving this dude like any credit. What's, man, I am impressed with Allen Iverson as he's aged. Cause frankly, I think deep down, I think we all wondered how he would age, period. I mean, like, he didn't live the healthiest of lives. And like we thought, but I feel like he's come at peace. Like, I don't know. And more importantly, he's self-reflective, because a lot of these athletes aren't. They will go to their grave with the way that they felt. And they, and Iverson flat out said, he's like, I wish I would have listened to Larry Brown more. Like, I don't know. And like, and I think Brown was like said the same. It's like, both of these guys, like, I don't know, it took a lot of headbutting, a lot of headbutting. I forgot about that in spat. Like, you think that a team going 41-14 would, it would be peaches and cream. It wasn't peaches and cream. It involved a lot of kind of ego handling, a lot of screaming, literally, like effing each other back. Like, I don't know. It was, it brought me back to a lot of the stuff I forgot, because I just remember that as just like the best non-championship season of my life. And like, I don't know. And I'll say it, like, I don't know, like, not all big time loser theory. It's 2B on my favorite teams of all time, period. They're on par with the OA Phillies as like my second favorite team.
Mark Zumoff said that, you know, he's a Philly guy. He said he never saw the city go up for anything as much as they did for that Sixers team. And he's right. Cause again, like, this is 2001. Again, this is before the 08 Phillies. This is before the Eagles won their Super Bowl. Again, like a lot of us didn't remember, you know, the 80 Sixers. They didn't remember the 80 Phillies. So again, like, it was a long time between, you know, real legit championship runs. I mean, obviously the Flyers made a championship run in 87, but it's a long time in 90. There was a 93 Phillies, but I mean, it was a long time between, you know, really exciting championship runs in Philadelphia, especially with the Sixers. So again, like, you know, that city,
well,
that
I team, feel. Oh, sorry, Roy. I feel like that was like the first team, really very good team, that I had control of my time and effort. Like, when I'm 13 years old, I can't like devote too much. Like, I mean, I love those 93 Phillies, but maybe I wasn't mentally capable enough of like absorbing everything. That Sixers team, they were showing highlights. I remember that I think it was 9-0 start. I remember every one of those damn games. If you said I could get every one of those games for $200, I'd be like, give it to me. I would watch every one of those games, because I just remember the chemistry that team had at the beginning of the season. It was like, up until then, I didn't know anything else other than ineptitude from the Sixers. Because like, that's why, like, I don't know, when like people are passionate about the Sixers that are old, it's like, I don't think we have a choice. We lived through so much drag. It's like, why quit now?
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, that team, there was something special about that team. And like I was saying, you know, initially, like, there wasn't anything special about that Pacers team in 2000. There really wasn't anything special about that Nets team that lost in the finals twice, the 2002 and 2003 Nets, the Jason Kidd, Kenyon Martin, Richard Jefferson, Kerry Kittles lost to the Spurs and the Lakers. And of course, there's that, a team who I think we'll get a documentary about sooner than later, that Oklahoma City Thunder team that lost to the Heat. The Heatles, if you will, the Durant Westbrook Harden team. I think that team gets a documentary at some point. But other than that, like, there wasn't any team that kind of like had that juice who didn't win, because some of those other teams lost finals, but they eventually won one. There's no other team that had the juice that the Sixers team had. And specifically, like you said, like, a lot of this surrounds the coach player dynamic, a coach player dynamic that almost didn't exist for that season, because before the season started, Larry Brown asked the Sixers to trade Allen Iverson, publicly asked.
Public knowledge. Like, this wasn't like, I don't know, shams, like, rumor. No, there was no rumor. Like, I don't know. Like, it was one of those things where I feel like Larry Brown was so beside himself with Allen Iverson coaching Allen. He's like, I don't even care. I'm not even going to go to Peter Vesey. I'm going to go on the damn TV and say, I want Allen Iverson traded. It was crazy.
No, it was just a straight up public declaration. Like, I don't, like, again, these days now, you're like, oh man, like, Durant wants out of Brooklyn, or Kyrie out of Brooklyn. And like, you hear about it, but you don't hear like Brooklyn, like, yo, we got to get rid of this dude immediately. I'm tired of this stuff. Like, you don't hear Durant like, yo, I'm tired of this stuff. I got, like, it was just out there. It was just out there for public consumption. You know, everybody knew it. And the Sixers were very close, almost made according to Billy King, a 4 or 5 team deal. to trade Allen Iverson. The holdup was that Matt Geiger, the Sixers center, had a $1 million trade kicker that would have kicked in if he was traded to Detroit. Matt Geiger said, like, yeah, no, man, like, I'm, you know, like, you're not going to, like, not pay me this $1 million. Like, this ain't going to happen. So the entire trade fell through. Did not happen. So
and of course, the Pistons didn't want to, like, I don't know, like, because that could have easily been accommodated by someone. But, like, the Pistons are like, nah, we're not, like, I don't know, we're not going to, like, so obviously, like, that showed you Iverson's trade value wasn't that high. Because if the Pistons wanted Iverson that bad, they would have been like, okay, we're going to move. No, because I mean, the jury was out on AI. Like, I mean, like, it, like, the stories are legendary. I mean, like, he's told them. It's not like, once again, this isn't like, I don't know, like, this isn't stuff you found on, like, the rumor mill. Like, this is documented by people that worked at TGI Fridays. That, no, I mean, and, like, Allen Iverson said it in interviews. He's like, I like going out at night. And I go, like, no, like, straight from the horse's mouth. And that's the thing about, and that's where I feel like, I don't know, like, if, I feel like, obviously, the main conflict, the main characters are AI and Larry. But the main character is Allen Iverson. Like, I mean, it literally took me 5 minutes before I got choked up, man. Like, I don't know, this dude's a legend. I love him more than 99% of the people I know. He just, like, oh, and I'm happy that he has gotten to this place where he has reflected on his life and say, yo, man, I made a lot of mistakes, but you know what? I'm here. I should have done things different, but I'm good. And right. I love hearing that.
Yeah, no, it's good that, like you said, like, he's, you know, self-reflective and a good spot in his life where he can kind of see those mistakes, understand he made mistakes. And then Larry Brown himself, you know, said he's made mistakes as well. But again, it was good to see the two of them in a good spot considering everything that they went through. Especially that season. That season, like you said, the Sixers got out to that undefeated start, toasted the league, just rolling through everybody. But it wasn't good enough for everybody because Iverson and Brown had a blowout in mid-December. Well, they had a blowout. They had kind of butt ahead before that. But they had an actual meeting during practice one day in mid-December where they kind of went behind closed doors with Pat Croce as a quasi-mediator. And just, you know, got up on the tables and started cursing each other out. It's kind of just went crazy. And then Pat Croce laid down the law. He's like, look, man, I'm not firing Larry. Like, Larry, I'm not going to fire Larry Brown. I'm not going to trade Allen Iverson. You guys got to figure this out. And so the two of them figured it out. And then Allen Iverson came around the conference table and hugged Larry Brown. And that was that. Like,
I feel like, but that's strong infrastructure. Pat Croce was like, I don't know, like, because yeah, really, not many people. Because you had, like, I don't know, that was Larry Brown's right hand man. Like, was like, I think he said, he's like, yo, do you want to be an assistant coach or you want to run the team? He's like, yo, let me run the team. Like, you need that strong presence to be like, yo, bleep, you sit down, you're gonna get along. No, I feel like that's the stuff you need to manage these, like, crazy dynamic personalities. And I don't think you're not gonna get more dynamic, if you want to use that word, than Allen Iverson. But I feel like, I don't know, Croce was one of these dudes that just saw, like, I don't know what, like, no, I know. I think Allen said it in the documentary. He's like, yo, I know I'm trouble, but I'm worth the trouble. Like, I don't know. Like, he's like, and I feel like, I don't know, he wanted Larry to see that. And I think, like, eventually, like, once Croce said, you just need to figure it out. And they did.
And the thing about Pat Croce, again, like, you know, we know him, you guys know him, probably know him. You know, he's the positive, upbeat, I feel great kind of guy or whatever like that. So when he's in that meeting and he says, like, yo, you two got to figure this out. Like, you know, like, you guys are grown adults, you got to figure this out. Like, that carries a bit more weight when, like, the positive guy is like, look, man, it's like, we're not doing this stuff anymore. Like, this is childish behavior. Like, you guys are adults, like, figure it out like adults. Like, when Pat Croce, you know, like, is that guy to lay the hammer down. Because Iverson said, like, himself, he said, like, I never really saw Pat Croce like that until that moment. Like, I never saw him act like that, talk like that until that moment.
Yeah.
But he did. And again, they hugged it out, made it work. And then that team kept rolling 36-14 at the All-Star break. But, you know, during that run, Theo Ratliff broke his wrist and had to miss the rest of the season. And, you know, the Sixers obviously needed a man in the middle of the paint to
make that all work. And frankly, Roy, I think his career wasn't the same after that.
Yeah, people keep saying, like, oh, man, I wish the Sixers hadn't made that trade because the Sixers with the Theo Ratliff, you know.
I don't think they would have made it past the Raptors, period.
people, because initially because Theo Riley had a stress fracture in his wrist. Initially, the report said he was out for 4 to 6 weeks. Theo Riley didn't get better until that summer. Like, he would not have played in that, and he would not have played the rest of the regular season. He would not have played in that playoff run. The Sixers had to make a move, and the Sixers, you know, made that trade with Atlanta for Dikembe Mutombo. But I keep hearing people say, like, oh man, like, the Sixers should have just waited until Theo got better.
Nope.
Theo didn't get better. That's the thing.
Another revisionist history. You only traded for the defensive player of the year. I don't know. Like, it's not like Dikembe was a bump. Like, I think what people see is they didn't play the most cute brand of battle. Because when they had Theo, they got up and down the floor. Like, he was a rim runner. Like, he was very athletic. Like, I don't know. Like, that was like, I don't know. Like, but no, that was a regular season team. I'm telling you, that would have been like this Sixers team if they didn't trade for Dikembe. Because Dikembe brought toughness. He brought vet leadership. That's what I think people don't get about. Like, because people just think basketball, it's like, oh, who can just score the most? No, you need that intangible stuff. And, like, I don't know. Obviously, you win with the Shaq and Kobe's. But those teams that get to the finals, they need vet. Like, I mean, can you think of a better example of just a vet-laden toughness? That's why that team was loved by Philly. Because they were just – hard nose. They were very equivalent to those 93 Phillies teams.
Those teams are nothing but toughness and guile and grit. And again, like, Eric Snow and George Lynch and Aaron McKee and Todd McCullough, like, these guys had to fight for everything. Rajah Bell, like, Jermaine Jones.
Yeah.
These guys had to fight for every minute they ever got on an NBA court. Like, these aren't like the, again, all due respect to these guys, but these aren't like the, you know, like the uber talented Allen Iverson type of guys, or they weren't the Ray Allens or, you know, Glenn Robinsons or Kobe Bryant's. Like, these guys had to, like, fight and claw and scratch, like, for every single minute that they ever played any NBA.
More importantly, so, Roy, each one of these dudes, I'll say 4 or 5 of these guys had playoff moments. Rajah Bell had, like, and once again, if you just take it to this current era of Sixers teams, how many role players can you say have had playoff moments? Not many.
Yeah, no, not many. Not many at all. So, yeah, and that team, again, fought for everything they got and, again, earned a bunch of stuff. Like you said, DPOY, Dikembe Mutombo. Also second team NBA, by the way. Sixth man of the year, Aaron McKee. MVP, Allen Iverson. Coach of the year, Larry
Sixth Brown. Man of the year?
Yeah, basically all the awards except for, like, most improved player. Who, by the way, like, Tracy McGrady won most improved player that year, which was a fun little fact. But just about every award that year came to the Philadelphia 76ers. And again, that team was on a run. They were on the flags were on the cars all around the city. Like, if you had a car in 2001 in Philadelphia, it had flags that you got from Modell's, probably Modell's. I don't know if the showcase was still open that back then, but you
had a flag. It was Modell's. It was Modell's.
You got your flags on the cars and you were driving around and you probably had the back page of the Daily News, you know, like, on your car, because they were on the back page of the Daily News. I think it was like 20 something days straight, some ridiculous amount of days straight. That city had a chokehold. That team had a chokehold on the city. Again, you know, we saw the playoff run, fantastic playoff run. Everybody remembers, you know, the step over with Tyronn Lue. But again, the Raptor series with, you know, Vince Carter, the AI.
Oh my God, no! Like, no
point games. I mean,
no, that was. I mean, that's why after this, comparing Embiid to an AI is just insulting to Allen Iverson. Like, I don't know, this dude can't. Like, no, like, I don't know. This dude's playoff run in 01 is, like, I'll say it's a top 15 in the last century period. I mean, that dude, like, he had multiple 50-point games. He what, dropped 48 in game one of the finals? No, that's what, unfortunately, I think gets lost in the step back, because obviously it's an iconic move and whatever.
Yeah.
People forget how great Iverson was in that game. That game he was out. No, and that's where I feel like, I don't know, like, you were, like, I just remember that, man, you just had great performances. And another thing, people need to stop comparing centers. I don't care what center, to Shaquille O'Neal. Stop. This dude is literally, like, I think Stephen A. Smith has said in a while, one of, probably, I'll say, next to Chamberlain, Will, the most dominant big man. I'll say the most dominant player, like, the most physically imposing player in the history of basketball. Period.
Correct. Yeah, like, you, like Shaq would just, like, roll out of bed and just, like, you,
they
saw
need,
the elbows.
No, Larry Brown said, we need 18 fouls. We need, right. Because, no, I tell, there was seriously, and I feel like LeBron was this way, but I mean, but Shaq just took it to another level because he was athletic and he was just he literally, like, in his peak, which I think is that three-peat. I think that was his, like, and they could have won. And if ego doesn't happen, like, I don't know, like, because you had pre-peak Kobe, but you had super. No, I think he called himself the nuclear weapon, and like you had like I don't know, like the atom bomb was called. No, you literally could not guard Shaquille O'Neal in his prime.
No.
Period. If he could, if he actually could shoot free throws, he would average 45 points a game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think your LeBron comparison is spot on. Like peak LeBron and peak like Shaq. Like, you just couldn't guard those guys. Like, those, like, if those guys wanted 40, like, on a given night, they would just get 40. Like, it doesn't matter who you put. It didn't matter who you put on those dudes. And Shaq, again, like, you saw the elbows that he gave Tom McCullough and Dikembe and basically everybody who had to guard him in that finals, because he was just so physically more physically dominant than everybody else on the court.
And like, I feel like that Lakers team had a chip on their shoulder, because I don't think they got, like, they beat the Pacers the year before, and I think they got, like, kind of dismissed as, like, kind of, like, fraudy champions. Like, yeah, but they just had a point, and, like, I don't know. You just know. I mean, as a Sixers fan, you just cringe seeing that. But as, like, a ball fan, as a fan of ball, you just see. No, like, that's why these endless comparisons by these jackwagons comparing old era to this era just is going to drive me to, like, cut off my internet. Like, because, like, you cannot compare anyone in this era. I don't care. Jokic, nobody, to Shaquille O'Neal.
And I wish we had more time to talk about it, because there's a ton of stuff that you can get into. We highly recommend that NBA TV documentary again, Everything But the Chip. You raised a good point. I wish we had more time, but I'll give you 30 seconds. I'll talk about this. That title, that run, not even title run, Eastern Conference title run, I hold that Eastern Conference title run really high on the list of long playoff runs. Like, yeah, I think you're right. I think the Eagles title, the Eagles Super Bowl, obviously is number one. Nah, see, that Phillies, it's not tied with that Phillies title, because that Phillies title was the first title in a long time. It's right behind that Phillies title, though. It's right behind it.
Yeah, no, recency bias since I watched it, like, 20 minutes ago. No, but I feel like, I don't know, because if I can almost picture every game, or 75% of games, because I absolutely remember 80% of that 08 season. Literally, I remember why. Like, I mean, like, literally. I mean, but we got to the age where we were not completely grown yet. We were in our 20s or early 30s or whatever. Like, so we still, an NFL season, it's 17 games. So it's not like you need to devote that much, like, energy. But, like, I remember watching damn near every game of that Phillies 08 team. And obviously, like, I don't know, I'm 20 years old. What else do I have better to do than watch every Sixers game?
Yeah, no, it was, you know, we've had some fun moments over the years, but that Sixers run.
And also, Roy, and I think, like, and I think it speaks to whenever there's a good team in Philly, you latch on because you don't know when the next one's going to be.
Right. Yeah, I got to say, like, we've been a little spoiled recently. Well, not with the Sixers, but I mean, like, we've been a little spoiled recently again with the Eagles, you know, title run, the Phillies run last year, obviously. Recently, we've had a pretty decent run.
People Boston fans complain. They come, like, spare me. How many championships does a person born in 1991 can actually, not even, like, say, like, I don't know, say, like, I don't know, you were 13 when they won in 04. So you can claim that. So after that, a person born in 90, you have what, 10 championships?
Yeah, they've got plenty. You know, we've got a couple, but they've got plenty. Hopefully, we'll be able to add to that very soon. We got to get out of here in a second. But again, I do want to remind you guys, again, we are in the middle of our fundraising drive here at WPPM, raising $5,000 to keep community-focused radio here in Philadelphia. Please do us a favor. WPPM.phillycam.org/donate. Please donate anything you can to the Broad Street Line. Share. If you can't donate, please help us spread the word. $1, $5, does not matter. When you donate, please, very important, please acknowledge that you are donating in support of the Broad Street Line. The people who run the station are checking that stuff out, and they're very interested in seeing how much support we can drum up. So please make a donation if you can. Please do so in support of the Broad Street Line. And you get some pretty cool swag, too. Again, T-shirts and bags and hats and all sorts of cool stuff. Again, shout outs on the air as well. So please donate if you can. The WPPM fundraiser, WPPM.phillycam.org/donate. That is it for this edition of the Broad Street Line. Thank you guys as always for tuning in here on 106.5 FM. Until next time, we are out of here. Mr. Domingo, take us out, please.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
See you guys.